The Humana Honor Medicare Advantage Plan gives you $1,860 back each year in your Social Security check. Choose coverage that helps you keep more money in your pocket. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. The Part B Give Back benefit pays part or all of your Part B premium, and the amount may change based on the amount you pay for Part B. Limitations and restrictions may apply. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
Darkcast Network. Welcome to the dark side of podcasting.
Abgenommen, bedauert.
And thank you all for tuning in, and welcome to another episode of The Frequency of the Past. Today's episode, we have the mysteries of P.D. James. If you enjoy this episode, please let me know the usual ways. You can reach out through my email, mysteryfrequencypodcast@gmail.com. My social media, mysteryfreak, F-R-E-Q on Twitter, mysteryfrequency on Instagram, and you can also contact me through the comments on Spotify. I guess Spotify had an update recently, and now I can actually respond back to the comments that you post on Spotify. I don't know about any other platform players, but I'll keep you posted on those as well. So please, feel free to reach out. And lastly, if you enjoy this podcast, if you find yourself coming back for more, please consider following, reviewing, and rating the podcast, and also sharing it with anybody else who you think would like this kind of entertainment. And with all that, please enjoy the show.
Come, violent death. Serve for Mandragora to make me sleep. Go tell my brothers when I'm laid out. They then may feed in quiet.
Where's the waiting woman? Fetch her.
Oh, you are damned perpetually for this. My turn is next. Is not so ordered?
Yes, and I'm glad you are so well prepared for it.
You are deceived, sir. I am not prepared for it. I will not die.
Come, dispatcher.
I will not die. I must not.
Delays. Throttle her.
If you kill me now, I am damned. I am quick with child.
Why, then, your credit's saved.
Is she dead?
She's what you'd have her.
The Skull Beneath the Skin by P.D. James. Dramatized by Neville Teller. With Greta Scacchi as Cordelia Gray. John Moffat as Ambrose, Norman Rodway as Whittingham, Carolyn Blakiston as Clarissa, Richard Vernon as General Ralston, and Patricia Garwood as Roma. The Skull Beneath the Skin, Part 1.
Measured it carefully from the ground. Honestly, Miss Gray.
I know you did, Bevis. It's the pavement. It must be uneven. That's what it is. Oh, we should have bought a spirit level. My fault.
That nameplate, isn't it rather crooked?
Yes, it is. I know.
Tompkins? Blessed kittens off again. Excuse me, Miss Gray. I'd better catch him.
Why not get the job done properly? Here's the chap to go to. Give him a ring. Say I sent you. That's me on the front.
Oh, you're very kind. Sir George Ralston, Bart, DSOMC. Tell me, are you a connoisseur of nameplates or just a public benefactor?
Actually, I'm a client. If that is your Cordelia Gray, are you?
Yes, I am.
Then why do you call yourself Pride's Detective Agency?
Because, Sir George, we were set up by an ex-metropolitan policeman called Bernie Pride.
I see.
I worked for him for a time, and then he made me his partner. When he died, he left me the agency.
In that case, shall we go in? After you.
You'll have some tea, Sir George?
Please. Milk, no sugar. No biscuits.
Tea for two, please, Miss Maudsley.
Of course, Miss Grey, at once.
Don't people ever tell you that...
That it's an unsuitable job for a woman. They do, and it isn't.
I was going to say, don't they ever tell you your office is extremely difficult to find?
Oh, well, that's the idea of the nameplate.
I'm not sure that a crooked nameplate isn't worse than no nameplate at all, especially in your business. Your founder, how did he die?
He cut his wrists.
Oh, did he?
Here we are. Tea.
Thank you very much, Miss Maudsley. Just there.
There we are.
By the way, is Bevis back?
Oh, yes, Miss Grey. He caught Tomkins. Ah.
Oh, thank you.
Tomkins, Sir George, represents a sort of investment. He turned up and attached himself to Bevis, but we're banking on restoring him to his distraught owner once we've discovered who he belongs to.
Ah.
We've built up a reputation for reuniting lost pets with their owners.
I know. That's how I came to hear of you. Oh. My wife was having tea with a Mrs. Fortescue last week when you returned the Fortescue cat.
Ah.
You'd found the brute within 30 minutes. You could have charged three times what you did. I gather she's devoted to the animal.
Expensive we may be, but we are honest.
Well, my wife was terribly impressed.
What with, our efficiency or our charges?
Both. That's why I'm here.
Yes, Sir George.
The job I'm offering is part bodyguard, part private secretary, part investigator, and part, well, nursemaid. No knowing how it may turn out.
I'm supposed to be a private investigator.
No doubt, but it doesn't pay to be too purist these days. In any case, you could find yourself involved in detection, though it doesn't seem likely.
Perhaps you could explain what exactly you want me to do?
My wife is the actress Clarissa Lyle.
I see. I thought I recognised her at Mrs. Fortescue.
She hasn't worked much recently.
Ah.
We married in June 78. I'm her third husband, by the way. In July 1980, she was playing Lady Macbeth at the Haymarket. On the third night, she received what she saw as a death threat. These threats have continued intermittently ever since.
And what form exactly do these threats take?
Typewritten notes, each one headed by a small drawing of a coffin or a skull. All of them are quotations from plays my wife has appeared in, and they all deal with death in one form or another. The fear of death, the judgment of death, the inevitability of death.
But they don't specifically threaten her.
Well, she sees this harping on death as threatening. She's sensitive. Actresses have to be, I suppose. They need to be liked.
These notes, do you have them?
Here. The ones she kept, anyway. The first ones were thrown away.
Aye, but to die and go we know not where, to lie in cold obstruction and to rot. Measure for measure, isn't it? Not exactly a personal threat, though.
Perhaps not, but not very friendly.
You know not how to live, nor how to die, but I have an object that shall startle you and make you know whither you are going. I don't know that one. Webster, do you think?
Possibly.
How do they arrive?
By post, most of them. A few were delivered by hand, at the theatre or our London flat. The first half dozen or so were destroyed. These 23 are all we have now.
The first one of all, the one that came when your wife was playing Lady Macbeth, what happened?
She can't remember now what it said. She threw it away, thought it was an isolated bit of malice. Then a second came, and a third, and a fourth. My wife started breaking down on stage, had to be prompted.
Oh.
On the Saturday of the third week, her understudy had to go on. It was quite a struggle to get through the six-week season. And then the same thing happened in her next role. The first quotation appeared on the morning the play opened. It came off after 4 weeks. And my wife's performance may have had something to do with it. She thought so, anyway.
And then?
And then Clarissa didn't act again until she accepted a part in Webster's The White Devil at Nottingham. Victoria something or other.
Victoria Corombona.
Was that it? Mm. I was in New York at the time and didn't see it. But the same thing happened. The first note arrived the day the play opened. This time my wife went to the police. Not much joy. They took it away, thought about it, and brought it back. Sympathetic, but made it obvious they didn't take the death threat seriously. They did discover one thing, though. That particular note had been typed on my own machine.
Which is that note?
Here. We've dated them on the back. This is the time I was in New York.
On pain of death, let no man name death to me. It is a word infinitely terrible. This skull and crossbones, Sir George, not quite the same assured touch as the others, has it? And the typing's a bit amateurish. What do you think?
You may be right. Could have been done in a hurry.
You still haven't explained how you think I can help.
I'm coming to that. This weekend, my wife is to play the lead in a production of The Duchess of Malfi.
Ah.
It's taking place on Courcy Island, do you know it? About 2 miles off the Dorset coast.
Mm-hmm.
The owner's Ambrose Gorringe. It's been in his family since the last century. His grandfather restored the medieval castle in the 1880s. He used to play host to the Prince of Wales and his circle. Edward would arrive with his mistress, Lily Langtry, and they all amuse themselves with amateur theatricals. There's a lovely little Victorian theatre there. The present Gorringe seems intent on restoring castle and theatre to their former glory.
And you want me to go to the island and be with Lady Ralston?
I was hoping to be there myself, but that won't be possible. I have a meeting in the West Country which I can't miss. But she needs someone with her.
Mm.
This performance is important to her. They're doing the play at Chichester in the spring, and if she can regain her confidence, she might feel able to join the company.
Ah, I see.
But there's more to it than that. She's got hold of an idea that the threats may come to a head this weekend.
Oh.
In fact, that someone might try to kill her on Courcy Island.
What makes her think that?
Nothing she can explain, but it's what she feels. She asked me to get you.
And what precisely am I being employed to do, Sir George?
Protect her from nuisance, take any calls, open any letters, be on call at night, and bring a fresh mind to bear on these messages. Find out, if you can, who's responsible. You'll take the job?
Yes, I'll take it.
A little different from finding lost cats. Your rates will be rather higher, I assume.
The daily rate is precisely the same, Sir George, whatever the job. The final bill depends on the time taken, and any expenses, of course. But as I'll be a guest on the island, they shouldn't be too high. By the way, I'll need to know who else will be there.
Well, by the Saturday afternoon, when the cast and the audience have all arrived, there'll be about 100. But the house party itself is quite small. My wife, of course, with Tolly, Miss Tolgarth, that is, her dresser. Then is your host, Ambrose Gorringe.
Tell me about Mr. Gorringe.
There's not much to tell. He's known my wife since they were both children. Their fathers were in the diplomatic together. Middle-aged, unmarried. Read history at Cambridge, I believe. Authority on Victoriana. Spends a good deal of time and money building up his collection.
I'll take these. And probably the marble as well.
Ah.
Where did you find it?
A private sale, Mr. Gorringe. According to the owners, it's a duplicate of one of those marble limbs of the royal children at Osborne, the ones commissioned by Queen Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
They told me this was the arm of the Princess Royal when a baby. Oh, I haven't been able to get down to the Isle of Wight to check.
Oh, poor little Vicky. What a life she was to have. What with her mother, her son, and Bismarck. It's almost irresistible.
Ah.
But not at that price, Mr. Gaskin, not at that price.
Oh, it's probably unique. I don't know of any other duplicates of the Osborne marbles.
You know, this arm must weigh almost as much as the princess herself. It's a pity we don't know for certain.
I tell you what, Mr. Gorringe, I'll let you have it less 15%. That's cutting my profit to shreds.
You don't like it.
Well, I can't say I'm sorry to see it go. A child's arm and cut off like that. Whenever I look at it, I keep imagining it's oozing blood.
Hmm. All right, I'll have it.
Ah.
I must try it on my house guests next weekend and watch their reactions. We're putting on the Duchess of Malfi, you know.
Mm. Oh, really? Will theatrical productions become a regular event?
No, I think not. Upsets the household. I've already had to reassure my butler that this is a unique event. Now, if this were a full-size male hand, we could use it for one of the props. The play features an amputated hand.
Oh.
As it is, I'll just have to put it on display somewhere in the house. And I think I have the ideal spot.
He inherited the island from an uncle in 77. He was spending a year outside the UK at the time. Something to do with tax avoidance, I believe. Came back to England in 78 and has spent the last few years restoring the castle.
Mm. Who else lives on the island?
Well, he has three servants. The butler is called Munter. Mrs. Munter acts as housekeeper. And then there's Oldfield, the boatman and general factotum.
And this house party, who has he invited besides Lady Ralston?
Well, there's Ivo Whittingham.
Well, the theatre critic.
You know him?
Not to speak to. I know of him, of course.
He's supposed to be doing a piece about the theatre and the performance for one of the colour supplements. Oh. Quite an honour for Godinch, really. Whittingham doesn't do much writing these days. Rather ill, I gather.
You can get dressed now. Is that spleen troubling you?
Since I look and feel like a lopsided pregnant woman, yes, you could say it's troubling me.
Well, time may come when it's better out. No hurry, though. We'll have another think in a month.
I thought you said the spleen's enlarged because it's taken over producing the red blood cells, which my blood's no longer making.
That's more or less what's happening, yes. When one organ ceases to function, another tends to take over.
Yes, sir, would it be tactless of me to inquire, Sir James, which organ will oblige when you've whipped out the spleen?
Well, let's cross that bridge when we come to it, eh, what?
On pain of death, let no man name death to me. It is a word infinitely terrible.
I'm sorry, Mr. Whittingham, I didn't quite...
Yeah, nothing, Sir James. I was merely quoting Webster.
Actually, Whittingham's an old friend of my wife. She'll be pleased to have him around.
Who else is coming?
There's Roma Lyle, my wife's cousin. Roma. Used to be a schoolmistress, but now keeps a bookshop somewhere in North London. Mm-hmm. Unmarried, about 45. I don't know very well. We've only met once or twice. She might bring her partner, but if so, I can't tell you who it is.
My God, Roma, this place stinks.
It won't once we get it cleaned up.
Clean it as much as you like and it'll still look what it is, a basement slum. Oh, God, look at these books. I mean, 9/10 junk. They should be burnt.
Colin? Oh, look at this.
Hmm?
It fell out of one of the books. What is it?
Some kind of old woodcut. Shouldn't think it's worth anything.
We could ask Ambrose Gorringe when we get to the island. He knows about these things.
I like the skeleton at the top. And I suppose the arrow and the hourglass must mean something.
The great messenger of mortality. It's a good caption.
Fair lady, lay your costly robe aside. No longer may you glory in your pride. Take leave of all your carnal vain delight. I've come to summon you away. Tonight. Spooky.
It puts me in mind of Clarissa.
Clarissa? Why?
I don't know. I don't know why. Give it to me. I'll ask Ambrose Gorringe about it.
It was a mistake buying this junk. We should have stuck to the new stuff. And God knows why I let you talk me into buying all that left-wing garbage upstairs. No one wants it. There are enough cosy left-wing haunts already in this neighbourhood, and it's putting off the other customers. I must have been mad.
Look, Colin, you didn't take on this place simply to please me. You loathed teaching just as much as I did. And I wouldn't have resigned if you hadn't made the first move.
You mean it's all my fault?
All? What all?
It was a mistake.
Well, you chuck it. Stella will be delighted. My God, she must be praying for us to go broke. It's a wonder she doesn't lurk outside counting the customers.
That's not quite fair. She's my wife. She's a right to be worried. I mean, half the money I put in here was hers.
And that, my dear Colin, was the cleverest move she ever made. She made sure that you had enough money to make the business possible, but not enough to make it a success. I'll bet Daddy was behind that. She wants you back, Colin. Can't you see that? Back, neatly trussed like a sacrificial victim to be handed over to dear Daddy and the family business. Oh, she's shrewd, is Stella. A sharp little mind to go with those sharp red nails.
Oh, do shut up, Roma. We've been through all this 20 times.
Oh, darling, I'm sorry. Don't let's quarrel. We're tired, we're hot, and it's a bloody day. Yeah. On Friday, we shut the door and take off for Corsi Island. 3 days of peace, sunshine, good wines, first-class food, and the sea. No creditors, no people, just peace. And my God, don't I need it.
Roma, I'm sorry, I...
Oh, no! No! Oh, you can't do this to me. You promised. And I told Clarissa I'm bringing my partner. It's all arranged.
I am sorry. Look, honest. But Stella's father phoned this morning to say he's coming for the weekend. Look, I've got to be there. I've told you what he's like. I'll never hear the end of it if I'm away on a long weekend, leaving her to cope with the kids.
Daddy. In other words, the twin school fees, the car and the package holiday.
Oh, don't knock it.
Oh, what's Clarissa going to think?
Well, what would she think if I did come? She knows I'm married. Wouldn't it look rather odd, the two of us arriving together?
Clarissa isn't exactly a model of purity. And I don't suppose Ambrose Gorringe creeps down his corridor at night checking on where his guests are sleeping. I was planning to speak to Clarissa this weekend. Tell her about the shop. Ask her if she could help. That's why I wangled the invitation. After all, a third of her money comes to me if she dies without a child. It's all in Uncle's will. It wouldn't harm her to part with some when it's most needed. We'd only be asking for a loan.
I couldn't ask a woman for money.
You wouldn't have to. I'd do the asking. I hoped she'd meet you, like you. Then I could speak to her. Even 30,000 would make all the difference.
How much would you get if she died, then?
I'm not sure. About 200,000, I think. It could be more.
To be quite honest, I'm not sure why Roma Lyle was invited, unless it was a gesture on Gorringe's part to please my wife.
And those are all the guests?
As far as I know. Except for Simon, of course.
Simon?
Oh, sorry, Simon Lessing. He's 17, the son of Clarissa's second husband.
Tell me about him.
Well, his father was drowned in August 1977. After that, he wasn't happy living with his relatives, so Clarissa took him on. Mm. We've sort of adopted him. I'm not sure why he's invited either, come to that. Music's his interest. Clarissa probably thought it was time he met more people. He's rather a shy boy.
One last question, Sir George. Lady Ralston is apparently so frightened for her life that she's reluctant to be on Courcy Island without protection. Is there anyone of that company she has reason to fear, to suspect?
You can put that idea out of your head, Miss Gray. She has no reason to suspect any of the house party of wishing to harm her. No reason in the world.
Right. I had to ask. Now, when do you want me to arrive?
Your tickets are in this envelope.
Oh, thank you.
My wife has telephoned Gorringe to tell him she's bringing a secretary companion. You go down to Spaymouth Jetty. The launch from Crossley will be waiting to pick you up.
Fine.
You'll go over with the other guests.
It's quite typical of Ambrose Gorringe just to send Oldfield in the launch and leave his guests to introduce themselves. I'm Roma Lyle, Clarissa's cousin.
How do you do? My name's Cordelia Gray, but I'm not a guest. I'm going to the island to work.
Good Lord, Ambrose isn't writing another blockbuster, is he?
Not as far as I know. I'm employed by Lady Ralston.
By Clarissa? Doing what, for heaven's sake?
Oh, dealing with her correspondence, making phone calls, generally easing things along while she concentrates on the play.
She's got Tolly to ease things along. Well, what does she think of it? Tolly, I mean.
I haven't the least idea. I haven't met her yet.
Well, I can't see her liking it. You'd best meet Clarissa's stepson, Simon Lessing. He's probably nearer your age than anyone else on this benighted weekend. Simon, over here. Come and say hello to Cordelia Gray. She's Clarissa's secretary.
Clarissa said you'd be coming when she wrote.
How do you do?
I had to get special leave.
From school?
Yes, Melhurst. My housemaster wasn't too pleased. I don't really know why I've been invited.
Does there have to be a reason? A few days' break? A little swimming?
With Clarissa, there's usually a reason. Of course, she told me to bring some music.
You're a pianist?
I play the piano.
He's very good. Clarissa likes showing him off, doesn't she, Simon?
Does she? Oh, I just hope I don't make a fool of myself.
Discussing the perennially fascinating topic, Clarissa.
Hello, Ivo. I was just saying, she rather enjoys presenting Simon to her friends.
Have you ever been to Causey Island before, Simon?
No.
Yeah, then she's out to impress Ambrose Gorringe. Don't let her down. Do I know you?
No, I'm Cordelia Gray.
Are you taking part in the play?
I'm here to work. I'm Miss Lyle's secretary, her temporary secretary.
Now, that makes sense. Clarissa's relationships tend to be temporary.
Do you know anything about the performance? Who's taking part?
Oh, didn't Clarissa explain? They're the Cottringham Players, said to be the oldest amateur company in England. They're based in Spaymouth, very convenient.
Ah.
Yeah, they'll all be coming over by launch tomorrow. Look, we turn the headland in a second. Oh. You all see the castle.
Oh, my goodness. That's beautiful. It's just as though the castle was rising from the waves.
Impressive, isn't it? All that rose-red brickwork soaring to the sky.
Oh, but it's so light and graceful. Not what I associate with Victorian architecture at all.
You're interested in Victorian architecture?
Well, interested, but not at all knowledgeable.
I shouldn't tell Ambrose that. He'll devote the whole weekend to your education.
Is that him, waiting for us at the jetty?
That's him on the left. And there's Clarissa.
Darling! Darling Ivo!
Hello, Clarissa! I'm afraid I'd have to ask for your help, Miss Gray, in getting ashore. I seem to be as weak as a kitten these days.
Of course, Mr. Richmond.
Hello there. Welcome to Causey Island.
Hello, Ambrose.
I'll get ashore first. Give you my hand.
Thanks.
All right.
Thank you. Oh, Clarissa, my darling.
Well,
enchanting as ever.
My poor Ivo, what's life doing to you?
Taking its toll, darling, but you seem to have negotiated rather special terms. How do you do it?
Flatterer. Roma, my dear. It's been ages.
Too long, Clarissa.
Weren't you bringing someone with you, your partner?
Something unavoidable cropped up, I'm afraid. I'll save him for another time.
Do, darling. Come on, Simon. Don't lurk back there. Come and be introduced to Mr. Gorringe. Ambrose, darling, this is Simon.
Welcome to Courcy. I've heard a great deal about you.
Hello.
I'm looking forward to hearing you play.
Oh. Come on, Simon. I'll show you your room.
And you must be Miss Gray. Welcome to Causey Island.
How do you do?
Mrs. Munter will look after you. We've put you in a room next door to Lady Ralston. Mrs. Munter, this is Miss Gray.
Hello, I'm Lady Ralston's new secretary. If there's any post for her, it must come to me first, and I'll take any telephone calls for her.
Well, Opal's just brought a package of post across from the launch, miss. Would you like to look through it?
If you don't mind, thank you. Just these two. I'll take them.
Of course, miss. If you'll come with me, miss, I'll show you to your room.
Get everything for your next project at Menards. Tackle tough jobs with Loctite Power Grab. This all-purpose construction adhesive is easy to use and bonds to a variety of materials. Plus, it's high strength, paintable, and reduces the need for clamping with zero-second instant grab. Save big money on Loctite Power Grab at Menards and check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. At Humana, our Medicare Advantage plans give you coverage and care you can count on, along with guided support to help you feel your best. You could have a plan with a $0 premium or an all-in-one plan that may include medical and prescription coverage, as well as routine dental, vision, and hearing. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
What a magnificent hall. The staircase. The gallery. Oh, that tapestry.
A genuine William Morris, miss.
You must feel quite privileged living here.
It takes some getting used to. The cleaning's no joke.
Oh, but to live surrounded by all these beautiful things. Oh,
The stained glass is quite breathtaking.
The eastern window was commissioned by the original Mr. Herbert Gurringe in the 1860s. It portrays the travels of Ulysses.
So I see. Do you often show visitors around, Mrs. Munter?
I do act as a guide from time to time. Please follow me. And this is your room, miss.
Oh, but this is delightful.
The tiles are originals by William de Morgan. Oh. The mahogany and pine cabinet was painted by William Morris, and the paintings are by John Ruskin. What time would you like your early morning tea, miss?
7:30, please.
Thank you, miss.
Is that you, Miss Gray? Here you are. Our rooms connect, as you'll see. Come in here, will you? Charlie will see to your unpacking.
Oh, thank you, but I'd rather do my own.
As you wish. This is my dresser, Miss Tolgarth, Tolly. Meet Miss Cordelia Gray.
Hello.
She's come to help with my correspondence. Just an experiment. She won't be in anyone's way. If she wants anything, look after her, will you?
Of course, Miss Lyon.
I suppose we'd better talk, but it can't be now. Mm-hmm. That extraordinary-looking man, Munter, set lunch in the dining room, but I told him we shall eat on the terrace. That means there's time before lunch for Ambrose to give us all a quick tour of the castle.
Shall I fetch Simon?
Oh, there's no point him trailing round after us. He can go for a swim.
And this is my chamber of horrors. Meet my notorious Victorian murderers and murdresses, all modelled in Staffordshire pottery.
Do they tie up with this display of gallows literature?
Yes, indeed, in some cases. This pair, for example, are the infamous Maria and Frederick Manning, hanged in November 1847 before a crowd of 50,000. Charles Dickens saw the execution and wrote that the crowd's behaviour was so indescribable that he thought he was living in a city of devils.
And this elegant gentleman?
William Corder, aiming his pistol at poor Maria Martin. Mm-hmm. Note the red barn in the distance.
Yes,
of course.
He might have got away with it if her mother hadn't repeatedly dreamed that her daughter's body was buried in the red barn.
The most gruesome part of the whole collection's over here. Nasty little mementos of murder.
But quite fascinating, Clarissa, darling, you must admit. Don't you agree, Miss Gray?
Quite extraordinary.
Yes. That tag end of rope, for instance. Now, that's part of the rope that hanged Dr. Thomas Neal Cream. The Lambeth poisoner, in November 1892. The stained linen nightdress was worn by Constance Kent. Oh, not the one she had on when she slit the throat of her small stepbrother, unfortunately. But it has a certain interest, all the same. That pair of handcuffs with the key were used on young Courvoisier, who murdered his master, Lord William Russell, in 1840.
And the marble of the baby's arm?
Ah. No criminal interest, as far as I know, but it doesn't look out of place somehow. The man who sold it to me would approve. He kept imagining that the limb was oozing blood.
But it's perfectly hateful. It's disgusting.
It may be the only extant copy of one of the limbs of the royal children made for Queen Victoria.
Mm.
And if you dislike this, Clarissa, you should see the Osborne collection. They look as if the prince consort had descended on the royal nursery with a machete.
It's repulsive. What on earth possessed you, Ambrose? Get rid of it.
Hello. I didn't expect to see you, Tolly. What on earth are you doing here? Is anything the matter?
Here's your towel.
Oh, thanks. It's not all that warm. Why did you come down?
Why don't you leave?
Leave?
Why don't you leave this place? Leave her.
Leave Clarissa? Well, why should I? What do you mean?
Well, she doesn't want you. Haven't you noticed that? You aren't happy. Why go on pretending?
But I am happy. Where could I go? My aunt wouldn't want me back. I haven't any money.
There's a spare room in my flat. It's only small. It used to be my daughter's before she died. You could have that for a start. It isn't much, but you could stay there until you found something better.
But how could I find somewhere? What would I live on?
You're 17, aren't you? You're not a child. You could find something to do.
But what? I'm going to be a pianist. I need Clarissa's money.
Ah, yes. You need Clarissa's money.
In any case, I'm perfectly happy as I am.
Suppose she gets tired of you, like she did of your father.
What do you mean? She loved my father. They loved each other. He explained to me before he left my mother. Clarissa was the most marvellous thing that had ever happened to him. He had no choice.
There's always a choice.
But they adored each other. He was so happy.
Then why did he drown himself?
It's true. I don't believe you.
Don't, if you don't want to. But just remember what I've said when your turn comes.
Why should he do it? Why?
To make her feel sorry, I suppose. Isn't that usually why people kill themselves? But he should have known. Clarissa doesn't understand about guilt.
There was an inquest. They found it was accidental death. And he didn't leave a note.
If he did, no one saw it. But then, it was Clarissa who found his clothes on the beach, wasn't it?
Yes.
Suppose she died. What would you do then?
Why on earth should Clarissa die? She isn't ill, is she? Well, she never said anything about being ill. What's wrong with her?
Nothing's wrong with her.
Well, then why talk about dying?
Because she thinks she's going to die. And you know, sometimes when people think that strongly enough, they do die.
Bring me the casket hither and the glass. You get no lodging here tonight, my lord.
Indeed, I must persuade one.
Very good. I hope in time it will grow into a custom that noblemen shall come with cap and knee to purchase a night's lodging of their wives.
I must lie here.
You must. You are a lord of misrule.
Indeed, my rule is only in the night.
To what use will you put me?
We'll sleep together.
Alas, what pleasure can two lovers find in sleep?
My lord, I lie with her often, and I know she'll much disquiet you.
See, you are complained of.
For she's the sprawling... The sprawling... Oh, I'm sorry. I am sorry, Mr. DeVille.
For heaven's sake, Cariola, you've only got 3 lines to remember.
Oh.
Do cut out the coyness. You're not playing No-No Nanette.
I'm frightfully sorry, Mr. DeVille.
All right. Take it from the top.
Oh, must we? Every time we go back, I lose the impetus.
From the beginning. Please.
This bloody box is driving me mad. If we have to have background music in this scene, and God alone knows why, then surely Ambrose can find something more suitable than those damn Scottish tunes.
It was your idea, darling, as I remember. Brilliant touch, too, since we're in Victorian costume.
It was a musical box I wanted, not a medley of Scottish airs. And do we have to have a bloody audience? Cordelia, can't you find something useful to do? God knows we're paying you enough. Do you propose to sit on your arse all afternoon?
Yeah, Miss Gray and I will take a walk. The performance hasn't been exactly riveting so far, and the air outside will be fresher. Come along, Miss Gray.
Thank you, Mr. Whittingham.
No, don't mention it. This may be a stupid question. Gray isn't an uncommon name, but you're not by any chance related to Redvers Gray.
He was my father.
I thought there was something. It's the eyes. You know, he had a great influence on my generation at Cambridge.
Yeah.
He had the gift of making rhetoric sound sincere. And now that the rhetoric and the dream are out of fashion, I suppose he's forgotten. But I should like to have known him.
So should I.
Ah, like that, was it? The old story. Revolutionary idealist dedicated to mankind in the abstract, but not much good at caring for his own kid. Mm. Not that I can criticise. I haven't done too well with mine.
I think I should have liked him if we'd had time. I did spend 6 months with him and the comrades in Germany and Italy. And then he died.
You make death sound like a betrayal. And what about your mother?
She died when I was born.
Another betrayal. So, who looked after you?
Foster parents, most of the time. Then when I was 11, I won a scholarship to a convent.
Oh.
That was a mistake. A school, not the scholarship. They mixed me up with another C. Gray, who was a Roman Catholic. I don't think Father liked it, but by the time he bothered to reply to the education officer's letter, I was settled and they didn't like moving me. I wanted to stay anyway.
Redvers Gray with a convent-educated daughter. And did they succeed in converting you? That would have taught Papa to answer his letters.
No, they didn't convert me. But then they didn't try. Oh, look out, Mr. Whittingham. Oh, you're tired. Here, let's sit down for a while. Over there.
No, I liked it in the convent. I suppose it was the first time I felt secure. Life wasn't messy anymore.
Yes, yes, it must have been reassuring. Even one's sins neatly classified. These venial, those mortal. Mortal sin, it has a note of splendid finality, hasn't it? It almost dignifies wrongdoing. I suppose a mortal sin has to be something really special.
It's a grievous offence against the laws of God which puts the soul at risk of eternal damnation.
In other words, something really evil. If, that is, you believe in the existence of evil.
Oh, yes. I believe in the existence of evil.
In that case, there's something you should know. Clarissa once did something you might dignify as evil. And I have a feeling that for Clarissa it could prove mortal.
Are you sure you want to tell me this?
Quite sure. I think it may help you in what you're here to do, whatever that may be.
Very well.
It happened during the run of Macbeth in July 1980. Tolly, Miss Tolgarth, had had an illegitimate daughter 4 years earlier. Well, there was no particular secret about it. Most of us knew about Vicky. A really sweet child. Tolly brought her to the theatre occasionally, but usually the girl was at home with a childminder. That's how it was when the tragedy happened.
The tragedy?
It was 2 days before the opening. Clarissa was at the theatre and the minder was in charge of Vicky. The child had slipped out into the street and was playing in the gutter behind a parked lorry. The driver didn't see her and reversed.
Oh.
She was horribly injured. They rushed her to hospital and operated, and she stood there very well. We all thought she'd make it. But during the opening night of Macbeth, the hospital telephoned to say there'd been a relapse and to ask Tolly to go at once. Tolly always answered the phone in the dressing room, but by pure chance, Clarissa took the call. She'd just come off for her Act Three costume change. The banquet scene, you know. She put down the receiver and told Tolly that the hospital wanted her to visit, but that there was no hurry. Oh. After the performance would be all right. Tolly wanted to ring back, but Clarissa wouldn't let her. Shortly after the curtain came down, the hospital rang to say the child was dead.
My God. Well, how do you know all this?
I was there, in Clarissa's dressing room, when the first call came. You could say I had a rather privileged relationship at the time. When the play ended, I went backstage to take Clarissa out to supper. Tolly was still there then. It was a few minutes after we left that the hospital rang.
Oh.
We were all appalled when we heard the news. I took the trouble to get in touch with the hospital and ask about that first message.
And when you learned what had happened, was that when you stopped being a privileged person?
I should like to say it was. But the truth is, Clarissa dropped me when she discovered that her sexual favours were not an automatic guarantee of my literary ones. Like most men, I'm capable of betrayal, but not that particular sort. She found she couldn't buy favourable notices from me on tick.
Who was the child's father?
No one knows. Except Tolly, presumably, and she isn't saying. The question is, who did Clarissa think he was?
Not her own husband, surely?
At that time it was Lessing, Simon's father. Poor besotted fool. He and Clarissa had only been married a year. No, no, my guess is our respected producer, Adrian Deville.
Oh, you mean the man directing the Duchess of Malfi here?
The same.
Was Clarissa in love with him?
I don't know what Clarissa means by that word. She may have wanted him. He was around at the time.
Why is he here? He's famous. He doesn't have to bother with an amateur production.
Why are any of us here? It's possible he sees Corsi Island as a future dramatic Glyndebourne. Ambrose could make something of his Corsi festival if he's prepared to spend money. Not commercially, of course, but he could have some fun with it. Once he's got rid of Clarissa.
And does he want to get rid of Clarissa?
Oh, yes. Hadn't you noticed? She's trying to take him over. Him, his theatre, and his island. He likes his private kingdom. Clarissa is a particularly persistent invader.
I don't see how Clarissa can live with a memory of that child's death.
I'm not sure she can. When a person is terrified of dying, it could be because with one part of their minds, they feel they deserve it.
How do you know she's terrified?
Because there are some emotions which even an actress as experienced as Clarissa can't hide. Look, there are explanations. It was the first night. She was totally immersed in the part. She was Lady Macbeth at Dunsinane Castle. She was all keyed up for the banquet scene. I doubt whether she'd have left the theatre at that moment to go to her own dying child. It didn't occur to her that someone else might want to.
I don't see how Miss Tolgarth can go on working for her, but I couldn't.
But you will. I confess, I'm intrigued about your precise function here, but presumably you won't throw in your hand.
That's different. I'm just a temporary employee, but Tolly believed her when she said the child wasn't in immediate danger. She was robbed of sharing her daughter's last moments on Earth. How can she stay with Clarissa?
They've been together almost all their lives. Tolly's mother was Clarissa's nurse. The instinct for worship is remarkably persistent. Though she slay me, yet shall I trust her. The perfectly well-documented phenomenon. But if, like any of us come to that, she ever face the truth about her own feelings, then, I admit, I do wonder what would happen.
But it's so odd of him, Roma, darling. Yes. Surely we didn't frighten him away. I thought you wanted to show him off. Why else did you angle for an invitation? Who are you ashamed of, him or us?
We suddenly heard that an important American client would be calling at the shop this Saturday. Mm-hmm. Colin had to be there.
Ah, how conscientious of him. But I'm relieved to hear you have clients of any sort, let alone important American ones. Congratulations.
Enjoying yourself so far?
It's all right. Nothing terrible's happened, I suppose.
Done any swimming?
A little.
I haven't got round to it yet. What's the water like?
Quite cold, really.
Oh.
No, I take no interest in contemporary politics at all.
How wise.
But you can't opt out of all responsibility for what's happening in your own country.
Oh, but I can. I didn't collude in the depreciation of its currency, the spoliation of its countryside, the desecration of its towns, the destruction of its grammar schools, the mutilation of the liturgy of its church. Why should I feel personal responsibility for any of it?
I was thinking of aspects some of us see as more important. That our society is more violent, less compassionate, more unequal than it's been since the 19th century. And then there's the National Front. Well, you can't ignore the Front.
Indeed, I can. Together with militant tendency, the trots and the rest of the rabble. Oh, you'll be surprised at my capacity for ignoring the ignorance.
But you can't just decide to live in another age.
Why not? And I very nearly succeed.
Yeah, I'm grateful you don't reject modern amenities entirely. I mean, if I should enter into the final process of dying during the next few days and need a little medical help to ease the way, I take it you won't object to using the telephone.
If any of you decides to die in the next few days, all necessary measures will be taken to ease you on your way.
And what happens to this Eden of yours when Adam, solaced with no Eve, finally returns to the dust?
It would be almost worth marrying and breeding to have a son to follow me here. But sons, even if the process of getting them, deceptively simple physiologically, wasn't so fraught with practical and emotional complications... Sons are notoriously unreliable. A son might convert the castle to a casino and lay down a 9-hole golf course.
Talking of children, what's the news of your two, Ivo? Is Matthew still living in that Kennington squat?
As we don't communicate, I'm not in a position to say. Angela, on the other hand, writes a filial letter at boring length every month. My ex-wife, in case you meant to inquire, is with him in Johannesburg, which she calls Joburg.
Darling, I wasn't asking for the family history.
Weren't you? I rather thought you were.
you, Simon. That was worth hearing.
It was very well played.
Thank you.
He is good, isn't he?
Now, how about a song? Oh, does anyone sing? There's a book of songs on the piano.
Oh, The Ashgrove, one of my favourites.
Please sing it for us, Miss Gray.
Oh, shall I?
Oh, come on.
Yes, please. Will you accompany me, Simon?
Yes, of course.
Quite lovely.
I should have had more than enough of amateurs before the weekend's out. I'm going to bed. Simon, it's time you called it a day. I'll see you to your room. Cordelia, ring for Tolly, will you, and tell her I'm ready for her. Then come up in 15 minutes. I want to discuss arrangements for tomorrow. Ivo, you're drunk.
Black marks all round. We should have realised that we're here to applaud Clarissa's talent, not to demonstrate our own. If you plan a career as secretary companion, Cordelia, you'll have to learn more tact.
Are you drunk, Ivo?
I shall be sober enough for what I have to do tomorrow.
Oh, here you are. I've sent Tolly away so that we can talk. Don't just stand there. Get yourself a chair.
Oh, yes, of course.
You seem to have enjoyed yourself this evening. Perhaps I should remind you that you were hired as a detective, not an after-dinner entertainer.
Well, perhaps if you were honest with them and told them why I'm here, they'd be less likely to treat me as a fellow guest.
What good would that do? If you don't mix with them, how can you watch them? Besides, the men like you. I've seen Ivo and Simon looking at you. Don't pretend you don't know it. I hate that kind of sexual coyness.
I wasn't trying to pretend anything.
Pass me that deep cleanser, would you? Tell me, what do you think of Simon's playing?
I'm not really qualified to judge. Obviously, he has talent.
Oh, talent! That's common enough. One doesn't invest £9,000 or more in mere talent. Can he succeed? That's the question. I'll ask Ambrose after the play. I can't worry about anything till then.
I think we should discuss the messages and our plans for the weekend, especially tomorrow. We ought to have spoken earlier.
Oh, there really hasn't been time. Anyway, you know what you're here for. If there are any more messages, I don't want to know about them. It's vital I get through tomorrow's performance. If I can only get my confidence back, I can face almost anything.
Even the knowledge of who's doing this to you?
Even that.
How many of the people here know about the messages?
Well, Tolly, I haven't any secrets from her. I expect Ivor knows nothing happens in the West End he doesn't get to hear about. And Ambrose. He was in my dressing room once when a note was pushed under the door. Simon doesn't, unless Tolly's told him, and I can't think why she should.
How about your cousin?
Roma? Oh, she doesn't know, and if she did, she wouldn't care.
Tell me about her.
There's not much to tell. And what there is boring. That towel, please, darling. We are first cousins. My father's younger brother ran off with a barmaid, made a mess of his life. And then he expected Daddy to help him out. And he did. Well, at least as far as Roma was concerned. She was always staying with us, especially after her own father died. Poor little orphan Annie, perpetually miserable and such a bore. She wasn't a bit grateful.
Should she have been?
Well, I think so. Daddy didn't have to take her in. She could hardly expect him to treat her the same as me, his own child.
Ah, yes, children. You know, you should have told me about Tolly's daughter. If I'm to help, I need to know anything that might be relevant.
But that isn't relevant. It was all a mistake. Tolly knows that. Everyone knows it.
Oh.
I suppose I ever told you. Typical. Can't you see he's sick? He's dying. And he's eaten up with jealousy. He always has been. Jealousy and malice. He could have been a second Tynan, and look at him now, dying on his feet. He'd no right to come here looking as he does. It's like having a death's head at the table. It's indecent.
So, Miss Tolgarth couldn't have had anything to do with the notes?
Of course not. What an idea. She's devoted to me. If you can't see that, you're not much of a detective. Besides, she can't type. The messages are typed, in case you haven't noticed.
All of them. They've always been typed, even the ones that came when you were playing Lady Macbeth.
Yes, I suppose so. It was a long time ago. It wasn't my fault. I didn't kill the child. Anyway, the hospital had no right to phone like that. They knew it was a theatre, that we were in the middle of a performance. Besides, she couldn't have done anything, even if I'd let her go. The child was unconscious. She wouldn't have known her. It's sentimental and morbid, this sitting by the bedside waiting for people to die. What good does it do? And I had 3 costume changes in the 3rd act. What are you looking like that for? I'm not paying you to judge me.
I'm not judging you. I wanted to help. But you have to be honest with me. What is it you're really afraid of?
Don't you know? Death. That's what I'm afraid of. It isn't the fact of death. It's my death. There was never a time when I didn't see the skull beneath the skin. I knew the facts of death before I knew the facts of life. I mean, no one can say, don't worry, it may never happen. It will happen. To me. I can't describe the fear. How terrible it is. Wave after wave of panic sweeping over me. Sometimes, I hold up my hand like this. And think, here it is, part of me, warm, living. And one day it'll hang, white and cold and unfeeling and useless. And then it'll rot, and I shall rot. Now I've told you, and you can despise me.
I don't despise you.
Aren't you afraid of death?
It doesn't seem reasonable to be afraid of something that's inevitable and universal.
Words, just words. All they mean is that you're young and healthy and don't have to think about dying. To lie in cold obstruction and to rot. That was in one of the messages.
I know.
And there's another to add to the collection. I've been keeping it for you. It came by post to the London flat yesterday morning. You'll find it in the bottom of my jewel case. Over there. No, by the bedside table. On the left.
Oh, I have it. It's a beautiful casket.
Ambrose gave it to me this morning. A good luck present for the performance tomorrow. I took a fancy to it when I saw it 6 months ago, but it took a time before he got the message. The letter's in a secret drawer. Not so very secret, actually. You better bring it over here.
Oh, it's surprisingly heavy, isn't it?
Here. You press this.
Oh, that's neat.
You see this notice? This is probably the most important notice I ever had. I was playing Hester in Rattigan's The Deep Blue Sea at the Spaymouth Playhouse just across the water. That was in 1977, Jubilee year. I wasn't staying here on the island because Ambrose was abroad for a year. Something to do with tax. You had to be out of the country for 12 months or something. The theatre's closed now, alas. But they seem to like me. See. Clarissa Lyle triumphs in Rattigan Revival. Well, only a small provincial paper, of course, but still.
What a nice headline. And is that the letter?
Ah, yes.
Here you are. A coffin this time. Who must dispatch me? I account this world a tedious theatre, for I must play a part in it against my will. Is that from the Duchess of Malfi?
That's right.
Not very appropriate. He must be reaching the end of suitable quotations.
Perhaps he knows he won't need many more. There's only tomorrow. Perhaps he knows that tomorrow will be the end.
Ah, good morning, Miss Gray.
Good morning.
Well, it looks as if we're going to be lucky in the weather.
Yes.
The guests should arrive in sunshine and get back without risk of parting with their supper. The crossing can be quite treacherous in bad weather. Will you have coffee?
Thank you.
And is our leading lady awake?
Not yet, and I'm rather pleased she isn't. Look, I found this pushed under Clarissa's door this morning.
The great messenger of mortality. Somewhat melodramatic.
Is the woodcut yours? If so, someone has mutilated it for you. Look on the back.
Oh, dear me. Thus it lightens into action. I am come to kill thee. Lines from the Duchess. Mm. So the messages are still coming, I did wonder. I take it that weeding out this kind of nuisance is one of your duties.
One of them. So, is it yours? It looks old and valuable.
No, it's interesting, but not my period.
Mr. Gorringe, this is your house. Miss Lyle is your guest.
I accept the implied rebuke. One's guests certainly have the right not to be menaced while under one's roof, but what would you have me do? I'm not a policeman. I can hardly interrogate my other guests. Besides, is it any more than a practical joke in poor taste? Surely the best response is a dignified silence. Clarissa should demonstrate a total unconcern.
And that's what she will do, at least until after the play. She won't see this. I can trust you not to tell her.
Of course. I have a strong interest in Clarissa's success, remember. Mm. Incidentally, that woodcut belongs to Roma.
Roma? How do you know?
She told me she found it in a second-hand book and thought I might be interested. She showed it to me yesterday, just before the rehearsal, and I left it on the blotter on my desk in the business room.
Where anyone could have seen and taken it.
You sound like a detective. No doubt you'll be interested to know that the message was probably typed on the business room machine.
Well, I can check that at least.
Oh, before you go, something else has occurred. Rather more annoying than a poison pen letter. Oh. Someone has broken the lock of the display cabinet and taken the marble arm. If, during your duties as secretary companion, you should happen to learn who it is, I'd be grateful if you'd suggest that it's returned. Mm. I admit the marble's not to everyone's taste, but I have a fondness for it.
When did you notice it had gone?
Well, Munter tells me it was in the display case when he locked up last night, and that was at 10 minutes past midnight. I found it missing and the lock forced when I went to the kitchen to make tea at 7 this morning.
What are you going to do?
Nothing. At least until after the play.
I think it vital that Clarissa doesn't know. The least thing could upset her. We'll just have to hope no one else notices it's missing.
And if they do, I suppose I can say I've removed it to please Clarissa. It's humiliating to have to lie, but if you think it important.
I do, very.
Good morning, Ambrose. Any breakfast?
George, my dear fellow. Of course. But where did you spring from?
Got through my meeting late yesterday. Drove most of the night and slept in a lay-by. Thought Clarissa would like me to put in an appearance if I could make it. Good morning, Miss Gray.
Sir George.
Don't suppose Clarissa's up yet?
Not yet.
But how did you get to the island? I didn't hear a launch.
Found a couple of early fishermen. I've been on the island for a couple of hours. Didn't like to disturb you. Yes, I will have coffee.
Oh. Ooh. What sort of a day?
Looks as if it'll be fine. Your husband's just arrived.
Apparently his meeting ended sooner than expected.
George? But that's ridiculous. He isn't expected till late tonight.
Well, he's here.
Tug on that bell rope, will you? It's time Tolly brought in my tea.
I wondered whether you'll still be wanting me.
Well, of course I'll still want you. What possible difference does this make? You know what you're here to do. If someone's out to get me, they aren't going to stop because George has arrived.
Before Miss Tolgarth gets here, could you tell me the programme for today?
Don't you know? I thought I'd explained it. The curtain's due to rise at 3:30. Ambrose is arranging an early lunch about midday, and I shall rest up here alone from 1 o'clock. Mm. You can call me at exactly 2:45. Mm-hmm. The launch from Spaymouth will be bringing the cast at about 2:30, and there's a larger hired launch for the guests. That'll be arriving at about 3.
And this morning, what's planned for the 3 hours between breakfast and lunch? I think we should try to stay together.
We shall all stay together. Ambrose will be hosting a sightseeing trip to see the skulls of Courcy.
The skulls of Courcy? Do you mean real skulls?
Oh, they're real enough. In the crypt of the church. Ambrose will recite the famous legend. Well, that should put us all nicely in the mood for the horrors of Amalfi.
Looks more like a Turkish bath than a church. Sorry, Gordon, but I can't admire it. Who did you say the architect was?
George Frederick Bodley. And I'm sorry you don't like it. The paintings on the reredos are by Lord Leighton. And the glass is by William Morris's firm. They specialised in these lighter hues. The east window is considered rather fine.
I don't see how anyone could actually pray in this place. Oh, is that the war memorial?
The wreaths appear to have been in place some little time by the look of them.
And there'll be fresh ones on November the 11th. Munter makes them from our own laurels and hangs one up each year. Oh, yeah, well, his father was killed in the war. In the Navy, I think. Anyway, he was drowned. He told me that much.
And do you assist at this charade?
No, he hasn't asked me. It's a purely private ceremony. I'm not sure I'm even supposed to know that it happens.
It throws a new light on Munter, though. Who would suspect him of that streak of romanticism? It's all a bit pointless, isn't it? No one seems to know any longer what Remembrance Day is supposed to be for.
It's for remembering the good chaps who gave their lives fighting for us. Once a year, for 2 minutes, you wouldn't think that was too much to ask.
Indeed.
At our last parade, the padre delivered a sermon about the Third World, for heaven's sake.
I suppose he thought world peace was relevant.
Armistice Day isn't to do with peace, it's to do with war and remembering one's dead. A nation that can't remember its dead will soon cease to be worth dying for.
Very
but you
true.
Can't...
And what's so peaceful about the Third World, anyway?
Now, ladies and gentlemen, if you will follow me, I'll lead the way down to the crypt where we keep our skulls. This way.
Of course, I've seen all this before. It still sends shivers down my spine.
Oh, this part is Norman, isn't it?
Quite right, Ivo. We're in the original structure down here. Now, are we all assembled? I'll put on the electric light now.
Oh, my God! Who on earth were all these people?
Generations of Courcy folk.
But to pack all these skulls together, row after row of them, it's obscene.
But practical, Miss Lyle, you must admit, the optimum use of available space.
Oh, hundreds of grinning skeletons. Mm. Deliciously horrific, don't you think?
It's like a nightmare.
And all wedged tightly together. Isn't that cement? Some of them have been cemented together.
How observant, Miss Gray. Yes, that was found necessary some years ago when the skulls on the bottom rows began to crumble under the weight.
Who gathered all these skulls together?
My revered forebear, Herbert Gorringe, in the 1860s, soon after he bought the place. The story goes that all the inhabitants of Courcy Island were wiped out in the 17th century. Apparently, the de Courcy at that time had taken to exercising his droit de seigneur a little too freely. Local maidens from the mainland abducted, raped, and their tortured, mutilated bodies brought in on the tide days or weeks later. No one dared to do anything. Then came the bubonic plague. It raged particularly fiercely on this coast, but the island was safe. Till one day, the father of one of De Courcy's victims, knowing he was infected, launched his boat and set sail for the island. The De Courcy's and their court were at dinner when the door to the great hall opened and he appeared. His huge, shambling, sea-drenched figure stumbling towards his enemy. There was a moment of astonished silence, and in that moment, he reached the Lord, flung his great arms around him, and kissed him full on the mouth. And the plan worked. De Courcy and all his people were wiped out.
Well, that story would make an opera. All you need is a Verdi or perhaps a Benjamin Britten.
And when great-uncle Herbert began planting his pleasure garden, he kept turning up skeletons. So his men collected the skulls and arranged them here.
Darling, your island's a positive repository of horrors. There's something much closer in time, isn't there? Tell us about the devil's kettle.
Well, that story is rather beastly. Oh,
darling, don't be so stuffy. It's 40 years old at least. And I know about it anyway, but I want to see where it happened. And I've got a personal interest. George was here on the island at the time, weren't you, darling? Did you know that George was here?
Yes, I know.
Whatever it is, you may as well show us. Clarissa won't give you any peace until you do. Right. It can hardly be worse than this place.
If you insist. We have to go down even further than we are, though, and to do that, I must unlock this door. We keep the key here. It's a bit stiff. Now, this way. Two abreast only, please. And stick together. Watch your footing on these steps. They're rather slippery. They're worn right down. Oh, they've been used daily for hundreds of years.
Careful now.
No, it's all right. Don't panic, anybody. No, I'd forgotten that the lights are on at times, which I'll find the button in a second. There.
I wish you warned us before playing silly tricks.
No trick, I assure you, and it won't happen again.
We must be 40 feet below ground. How is it ventilated?
By shafts. One of them comes up into the concrete bunker they built in the wall to guard the southern approach to the island. There are several others. Right, now, everybody, gather round. This trapdoor leads down directly to the devil's kettle. Mm-hmm. Now, just draw back the bolts and open it, and you'll be able to see.
How do you get down into the cave?
There's an iron ladder fixed to the shaft. See, the other side.
Oh.
Runs down the wall.
Oh, yes.
Now, tell.
It happened in 1940. The island was taken over by the government as a camp and interrogation centre. Foreign nationals, suspected spies, Nazi sympathisers, you know the sort of thing. That's when you were stationed here, wasn't it, George?
Right.
In March 1940, there were about 50 internees on Courcy. Among them, a hard core of dedicated Nazis. They suspected one of their group, a boy of 22, of having betrayed their organisation to the British during interrogation. Perhaps he had. Or perhaps he was a British undercover agent, I don't know. What is beyond dispute is that the Nazis convened a secret court in the crypt of the church and condemned him to death. They brought him, bound and gagged, down that passageway to this spot. They pulled open the trap door. Look down. At the moment, the water level's about 10 feet below us. That's because the tide's on the turn. At high tide, the cave is always flooded. Every one of those iron rungs is covered. They bound their victim to the ladder, and they left him there to drown. He was a very tall young man. He died slowly in the darkness. And he died hard. Later, one of them crept back to untie him and let his body float out to sea.
Not the pleasantest way to die.
How did the story get out?
Someone talked eventually, I suppose. But not until after the war. Someone may have condoned what happened. After all, the army was in charge here, yet the internees got their hands on the keys to the crypt and the secret passage. And that suggests at least a degree of official carelessness.
What was he called, darling, the boy who died?
His name was Carl Blythe.
Oh, yes, Blythe. And the extraordinary thing is that he was English. Well, his father was anyway, his mother was German. And George was actually at school with him, weren't you, darling? They were at Melhurst together. Do they still remember him, I wonder, Simon? But you didn't like him, did you, George? He was 3 years older than you, and a bully. In fact, you hated him. And then to find him here, and at your mercy, wasn't it odd?
Can we get out of here? I feel like a voyeur.
Because I feel cold.
My wife has satisfied her curiosity. Perhaps we might go.
Poor Ralston. An instructive episode, don't you think?
Oh, I thought it was horrible. Does she always need to psych herself up with an exhibition of cruelty before a performance?
Well, she's nervous, certainly. Ralston's control, however, is admirable.
It'll be interesting to see what happens if the control ever snaps.
Mm. Well, I think I'll go for a swim.
Well, not so soon after lunch, Simon, darling. Take a walk first.
All right. See you all later. At the theatre.
Bye-bye. Time to rest.
Toffee?
Thank you. No, Ambrose, not before a performance. I thought you knew that. Will you ask Tolly to bring up the tea tray at once? China tea. She knows the sort I have. George, will you come up in 5 minutes? I'll see you later, Cordelia.
All better right. Make it 1:10.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Clarissa, just a moment. I've something to ask you.
Come in, Cordelia.
Lady.
Hold on for a moment. Would you sit down? Can you imagine it, George? 25,000, that's what she asked for. Came right out with it, red-faced like a child begging for more pocket money. Now, of all time, she couldn't even wait till after the performance. I haven't got any money. I'm an actress. Talk about crass stupidity.
Important to her, I expect. Couldn't bear the suspense of waiting. Had to know.
Oh, she never did have any sense of timing, not even as a child. Trust Roma to pick the wrong moment. Part of her general insensitivity. By God, she chose the wrong moment this time.
Would there have been a right one?
I told her outright. I'm not prepared to hand over capital to support a lover who hasn't the guts or decency to come and ask for it himself. And I threw in some damn sound advice for good measure. If you have to buy yourself a man, he's not worth having. She's madly in love with him, of course. That's what this shop of theirs is all about, a ploy to get him away from his wife. Roma in love, I ask you.
My dear, is all that our concern?
The money's my concern. Apart from anything else, I haven't a hope in hell of making a go of it. No capital, no experience, no sense. Why should I throw good money after bad?
As you say.
Cordelia, go and get yourself dressed.
Oh, right.
Then lock your door and come out this way. I don't want you fussing about next door while I'm resting.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose you'll be wearing that Indian thing again.
Well...
It shouldn't take long to get into.
None of my clothes take long to get into.
Nor to get out of, I dare say.
Oh, Clarissa.
Nah. Dear George. Always so gallant.
I wondered whether you'd like me to stay next door while you rest. The connecting door could be open or locked as you like. I wouldn't make any noise.
I've told you I don't want you next door or anywhere near me, for that matter. Ah. I can't speak verse when I know someone's listening. And I might want to. With the 3 doors locked and no telephone, I suppose I can hope to be left in peace. Now do go and change. Collect anything you want from your room.
Very well. I won't be a moment.
And don't rely on being able to watch out front. I may want you backstage.
All right.
Well, I'll be off now. I won't come back before the performance. I'll see you backstage after.
Goodbye, George. Cordelia, I'm setting the alarm for 2:45. You can come back about then, and I'll let you know if there's anything I want you to do during the performance.
Fine. Well, I'm ready.
I've locked my door and left the key in.
I want to check that. Then I'll lock the communicating door myself.
Very well. But if you want me, I'll be within calling distance. I can always get a chair from my room and sit at the end of the corridor with a book.
Can't you understand English? What are you trying to do? Spy on me?
No,
I told you I don't want you next door. And I don't want you pussyfooting up and down the corridor.
Yes,
I don't want you or anyone near me. What I want now is to be left in peace.
Well, then will you at least roll up one of your towels and wedge it against the door? I don't want anyone delivering notes to you by hand.
What do you mean? Nothing has happened since I arrived. Nothing.
And I just want to make sure it stays that way.
All right. It's not a bad idea. I'll block the bottom of the door.
Right. I'm going. Please lock the door behind me. I'll wait outside till I'm sure.
Goodbye, Cordelia.
Yes. Well, goodbye.
Oh.
Lady Ralston? Oh, you've unlocked the door. Are you up already? It's 3:15. Lady Oh, no. Oh, my God! Oh, Sir George! Oh, my
God! What is it, Ray? What can I do?
It's Lady Ralston.
Stop that bloody clock.
Oh, yes.
I can't see a damn thing. What's happened? Draw the curtains.
Yes.
I'm afraid it looks as though...
I'm sorry.
Merciful heaven.
I'm so sorry. You employed me to look after her. I was here to keep her safe. I should have stayed with her.
You couldn't have known.
It's her face. Someone has destroyed her face.
And there's what did it.
The baby's arm. Oh, those little marble fingers.
Covered with blood.
Oh.
Dripping with blood.
Don't touch it.
But look. Look, underneath, isn't that...
It is. Another message. The blood, I can't quite... Other sins only speak. Murder shrieks out. The element of water moistens the earth, but blood flies upwards and bedews the heavens.
Horrible.
Oh, I should never have left her.
I didn't believe she was in any danger. No one did. And she wouldn't have let you stay with her, you or anyone. Don't blame yourself.
Oh, but I knew the marble had been taken. I should have warned her.
Against what? Oh. You couldn't have expected this. Don't blame yourself, Cordelia. Gorringe, you better ring the police at once.
Yes. Oh.
We mustn't touch anything. Both these rooms must be locked. And isn't the audience on the way by launch? We'd better prevent them from landing.
And I'll organise a search party.
Well, mightn't it be better to wait for the police?
I'm not prepared to wait. Where's Elfield?
In his cottage, I imagine. The stable.
I'll get him to take out the launch and patrol the channel. That'll block any escape by sea.
Well, I think we'd better leave the room and lock the door till the police come.
Quite right. Come along, Gary. Oh.
Yes.
Oh. I'll find Elfield. You ring the police.
Yes.
What's up, sir? Where's Miss Lyle? It's nearly 3:00.
Excuse me, Tolly.
It's late. You're supposed to have called her.
You can't go in. She's dead. She's been murdered.
I have to go in. She always needs me before a performance.
No, there's not going to be a performance. Miss Lyle is dead. Murdered. I'm just about to ring the police. Until they arrive, no one can go into that room.
The boy? Does the boy know?
Simon? No, not yet. No one knows except Sir George. We've only just discovered the body.
You'll break it gently, sir. It'll be a shock to him.
It's a shock for us all.
Not, I think, sir, for one of us. If you'll excuse me.
I've never understood that woman. I doubt whether Clarissa did. Why this sudden concern for Simon? She's never shown any particular interest in the boy. Oh, well... I'd better get on with telephoning the police. But who should I ring? The chief constable, the CID?
Well, I should ring the Spamers police and leave it to them.
I'll do it from my office. Spamers police. I'm speaking from Courcy Island, from the castle. It's Ambrose Gorringe. I'm afraid there's been a terrible accident over here. No, that's not right. A murder. Yes, I'm quite sure. Lady Ralston, Miss Clarissa Lyle, the actress. Well, we had a performance planned for the theatre this afternoon. Miss Lyle was taking the lead, and she was staying here with friends. We found her a few minutes ago in her bedroom. No, no, it's clearly murder. I won't go into details if you don't mind, but it's very messy. Oh, and I noticed that her jewel box is missing. Right. Yes, we've locked the room. Yeah, very well, thank you. Yes. Goodbye.
What did they say?
Much as expected. Lock the room, don't touch anything, keep people together, don't let anyone land. And they're sending over a senior police officer, Chief Inspector Grogan.
Will you all come on stage, please? Now, quiet. Quiet, quiet, please. Everybody. I'm afraid I have some very shocking news for you. I don't know quite how to put it. Except to say that Clarissa Lyle is dead.
Oh.
And there's worse, I'm afraid. As Miss Gray here, her secretary, can confirm, it looks very much like murder. I've telephoned the police, and they'll be here shortly. In the meantime, they've asked that you all stay together here in the theatre. Now, Munter and his wife will bring you tea and coffee and anything else you need. Miss Gray and I still have to inform my other house guests of this appalling news.
But what about the play?
The performance is cancelled. Where do you suppose they all are?
Well, I imagine Simon is swimming. He said he was going to. Roma Lyle was in the library, but she's probably dressing by now. I imagine Ivor Whittingham is resting in his room. He's been looking none too well.
I'll see them, will you, and break the news? I'll go and find Simon. Then we'd better keep together until the police arrive. I suppose the courteous thing would be to stay with my guests in the theatre, but I'm not in the mood to face a barrage of questions.
The less they're told for the moment, the better.
What do you mean we should keep quiet about the actual cause of death?
We don't know the actual cause of death. But, yes, I think we should say as little as possible to anyone.
But surely it's obvious her face was battered in.
That may have been done after the death. There was less blood than you'd expect.
No, there was more than enough blood for me. You're remarkably knowledgeable about this sort of thing for a secretary companion.
I'm quite sure you've already guessed I'm no such thing. I'm a private detective. There's no point carrying on the charade any longer. And if you're going to say I've been useless, I know that too.
Oh, my dear Cordelia, what more could you have done? No one could have expected murder. Stop blaming yourself. Mm. Lugubrious self-reproach doesn't suit you.
Where is everyone? This place is like a morgue. Anyway, I'm not coming to the play. I'm damned if I'll pander any longer to Clarissa's megalomania. You all indulge her nonsense as if you're terrified of her. Someone should put a stop to Clarissa.
Someone has. She's dead. Murdered.
My God! What happened? How?
I really think
that I insist that you tell me.
Very well. She was battered to death with that marble limb of the dead princess. I'd rather you kept the details from Simon. Her face was smashed to a pulp.
The killer took your marble? But how did he know it was there?
He, or she, took it from the display cabinet sometime early this morning, and I'm afraid that the police will take the view that whoever it was knew it was there, because yesterday, before luncheon, I myself showed it to them.
In part one of The Skull Beneath the Skin by P.D. James, dramatized by Neville Teller, Greta Scacchi played Cordelia, John Moffat, Ambrose, Norman Rodway, Whittingham, Carolyn Blakiston, Clarissa, Richard Vernon, General Ralston, Patricia Garwood, Roma, Richard Pierce, Simon, Christopher Scott, Colin, Avril Clark, Tolly, John Bull, Sir James, John Warner, Gaskin, Anna Cropper, Mrs. Munter, and Marcia King, Miss Maudsley. The pianist was Geoffrey Braun. The Skull Beneath the Skin is directed by Matthew Walters.
At the UPS store, we know being a small business owner means holiday time is still go time. Still get those orders shipped time. And still re-up on stamps and supplies time. That's why this upcoming holiday, while others close up shop, we'll be open. And happy to help you keep being unstoppable. Come into your local store today. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. The UPS store. Be unstoppable.
The Humana Honor Medicare Advantage Plan gives you $1,860 back each year in your Social Security check. Choose coverage that helps you keep more money in your pocket. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. The Part B Giveback benefit pays part or all of your Part B premium, and the amount may change based on the amount you pay for Part B. Limitations and restrictions may apply. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal. The Humana Honor Medicare Advantage Plan gives you $1,860 back each year in your Social Security check. Choose coverage that helps you keep more money in your pocket. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. The Part B Giveback benefit pays part or all of your Part B premium, and the amount may change based on the amount you pay for Part B. Limitations and restrictions may apply. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.